Welcome to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. My guest this week is Aaron Sechrest, better known to the design world as OK Pants. Aaron has worked with clients like Disney, House of Blues, and Patton Oswalt, as well as having his work featured in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We talk about growing up in Cleveland, his blue-collar work ethic, getting his start out of college designing ads for escorts in the local arts and leisure newspaper, his love for stand-up comedy, and his involvement with Weapons of Mass Creation, all right after this. I'm taking the podcast to Cleveland in 2 weeks to do a live two-hour version of the show, but the only way you're going to get to see or hear the Creative South Podcast live is if you are at Weapons of Mass Creation. If you haven't gotten your tickets yet, you're in luck, because if you get your tickets right now by clicking the link in the show notes, you get the exclusive Creative South Podcast buy one, get one free ticket deal. That's two tickets for the price of one, or if you prefer, two half-price tickets. Either way, you get to bring a friend to WMC Fest. Plus, not only will you get to see me podcasting live, you'll be able to see this week's guest, OK Pants, tearing up the stage as the MC, and speakers like Stefan Sagmeister, Mark Bricky from Adventures in Design, and illustrator Jillian Adele. Don't forget to click the link in the show notes to get your BOGO tickets. Also, I really hate saying BOGO, so get your tickets quick so I can stop saying BOGO. 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 BOGO? Yeah, doesn't get any better. Get your tickets now to WMC Fest. Let's kick it off.
Great.
Aaron, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
Sure. So I'm not sure, should I call you Aaron or should I call you Pants?
Whatever makes you feel less stupid is what I would love for you to call me.
I will go with Aaron as someone who has grown up with a nickname my entire life.
Oh, yeah, what was that?
Every once in a while, my nickname, it's Frosty.
I should have seen that one coming.
Yeah, it's pretty easy one.
Still nowhere near as dumb as Pants, but yes, whatever. Yeah. Aaron is fine for this conversation or for wherever.
So where did Pants come from?
Well, it's a story from art school from a long time ago, about 16 or 17 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's the least interesting story in the world. Some classmate of mine called me Pants one day at random, and it stuck. There's no genesis beyond that story, I'm afraid. But that's the honest.
You weren't like sitting there and somebody pantsed you in front of somebody? Or
no, I mean, I don't ever even really... I wasn't definitely not wearing any loud wardrobe as far as slacks go. So I don't have any good excuse for it or exciting made up story. I've had plenty of time to make it up, but that's the truth.
See, now you got to come up with story just to appease people on small little podcasts out of their laundry room.
As verbose as I could be, I suck at making up stories. So that's where we are is the unfortunate part of that.
So speaking of where we are, did you grow up in Cleveland? Are you born and raised?
Yes, I was born and raised South Euclid, Ohio, which is about 15 minutes away from downtown Cleveland.
Gotcha.
Outer ring suburb, basically. And I live in Cleveland and my studio is in Cleveland, and I went to Cleveland Institute of Art. So I've really branched out and gotten out in the world in my 36 years is what I'm trying to say.
Hey, you know, at least you're in a metropolitan area and you're not living in the backwoods of Kentucky telling that same story.
So. Yeah, but you're probably not afraid of spiders as I am, So, well, you're not in Kentucky.
I'm not in Kentucky anymore either. So thankfully, I got out of there in high school.
But you're probably still way
But I'm petrified of snakes, if that makes you feel any better.
Yeah, that's my one thing is spiders. Snakes don't bug me so much.
Yeah, snakes terrify me.
I get it. I totally understand it.
My wife has the petrification of spiders. So I get that one. So how does a nice Jewish boy from the Cleveland area end up getting into graphic design and going to art school?
I think I realized at an early age I was really only good for one thing in this world, and I always had an inclination towards art. And I think it's really not a story that's unique to a lot of artists or designers where I went through high school. I bought a ton of comic books or read a ton of comic books, wanted to be like a Marvel. I wanted to be the next Jim Lee or Sam Keith or as it were. And then I just sort of really chased that into art school. It kept me from getting beat up in high school, just being, you know, pretty inclined to draw and pretty good at it compared to other kids. And then when I got into art school, I got into the illustration program there, majored in that for a year. And I wouldn't say I fell out of love with it, but I gravitated to a new major they launched that was more multimedia, more digital media driven, which in the year 2000 seemed like a pretty good strategic move for my career prospects. And also I just was interested in taking some risks and learning some new things because I was by no means at the top of the heap as far as illustrators go, but I felt like I didn't want to leave art school after 4 or 5 years with a limited skill set. So went into digital media, graduated with a BFA in digital media. And then, you know, years later, really you do something for long enough and you just end up doing what you're supposed to be doing. And that thing for me has always been graphic art projects, branding projects, illustration projects. So I feel like I have like a foot in both worlds as far as traditional design and traditional illustration are concerned.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you're the stuff that you put out definitely shows that. So you mentioned, and I've heard you talk about it on other podcasts, of you kind of gravitated towards art as a way to not get beat up. Were you a bullied kid in
school? No, I wasn't.
School?
Kids, I mean, this will be probably an odd story for a lot of younger people, but when I went to high school in like the mid-90s, you had basically the paradigm of you either had jocks or you had freaks. And I was definitely more on the freak end of things. Being in bands and having dyed hair and wearing band t-shirts that you made yourself were not cool things that were sort of respected by people that could bench press more than you or whatnot. So I didn't get beat up as badly as a lot of the kids I went to high school with, but I hung out with the more, you know, the burnouts and the band kids.
Skater kids,
that kind of thing. But I was, you know, I didn't have a bad run in high school or grade school and middle school, but I think that definitely was largely in part to if someone wanted a drawing of a weed leaf with a Tasmanian devil on top of it, I was their guy. So probably helped me out a little bit. I still have kids today that have tattoos that I drew for them in high school. And I mean, like, I never knew they got them tattooed. Like, we're talking like ballpoint pen on notebook paper. They would come up to me years later after high school was over and they would show it to me. And I was like, you got that? And they love it. But to me, it's like,
and meanwhile, you're going,
I got really better at drawing than
you. Yeah. You should have held out a little bit there.
I'm not complaining one bit about that. I think that's the raddest thing in the world that a kid would get that, especially having drawn it that early on in life. They should have just waited a couple years longer, but whatever, you know, it's pretty cool. It lets you know you're doing what you're meant to be doing, I guess.
Yeah. You ever find it weird just seeing somebody's tattooed something you've done on them?
I'll never forget because I was never one of the cool kids in high school. And I remember I was at the beach and I was talking to a mutual friend and they were hanging out with the cool kids. And I look over at this dude's, you know, this dude who was probably a year or two older than me. I look on his leg and he has, you remember the things you draw. I don't care how many things you draw or design, blah, 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 but you always remember that. And I remember it was a drawing of a bee and it was nothing I'd ever even given him. It was like something I doodled in like shop class for like some girl and he had it tattooed on him. It was one of the wildest things I've ever seen in my life. And then that was sort of those little things kind of just were like, you know, I don't believe in destiny or, you know, grand purpose, but I was like, you are supposed to be an artist if people are getting your stuff and not even telling you about it.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had anybody tattoo anything I've done on them. Well, if they have, they haven't told me because they regretted it.
Oh, yeah, but that's the best stuff to me. Like, I don't get touchy about people getting my stuff tattooed on them. If people try to commission me for new tattoo drawings, I say no, just because it's a different discipline altogether. I know it drives my tattoo artist friends crazy to have to try to, you know, not have the control to draw something the proper way. You know, I don't come from that world.
Yeah, that's definitely a different skill set. You know, I don't have nearly as many tattoos as you. I've got a few, but
I got to get more. I feel like any more, you know, I'm kind
of if I didn't have to pay for kids, then I would definitely be doing that. But
yeah, I get that. You know, yeah.
That whole responsible parenting thing.
Chicken tenders and iPads probably a little more important than getting a sleeve on your arm.
Yeah, very much so.
How old are your kids?
I've got twin 7-year-old boys.
Okay, so they're chicken tender ages still.
Yes, very much so.
I mean, I'm 36 and I still eat chicken tenders, so whatever.
So do I. Chicken tenders are delicious.
Well, good. Good. There's a lot of common ground here.
Yeah, when they stop eating them, I pick right up.
No, that seems like I don't have children, but that seems like the bonus part, definitely, if the mac and cheese goes uneaten.
Yeah, you don't get this felt dad-like body by eating healthy.
Stream. I don't trust dads that have abs.
Yeah, exactly. I am round. It makes me more aerodynamic.
Never trust a dad with abs.
Exactly.
Unless they're the Rock. You can trust him.
Yeah. Yeah. You're better off trusting him than not trusting him. It's probably safer. So you go through school, you know, you get your BFA in digital media stuff. What do you end up going out on your own right when you get out of school, or do you, because I know you said, you know, in high school and stuff, you were kind of making zines and t-shirts and stuff like that.
Right. I was very much, you know, that was the pre-digital world. Mm-hmm. You know, I graduated high school in 97. So, I mean, the prospect of even knowing Photoshop really wasn't a thing in Cleveland in that day and age. So
sure.
I got out of school and I had a friend of mine said they were hiring at a local weekly newspaper for like a graphic designer. So I just figured being in Cleveland, this is a good starting point, right? You know, you got to work your way up. And he got me a gig there. I literally graduated probably like on a Friday or Saturday. And that following Monday, I was laying out ads at this newspaper.
Oh, wow.
I don't know the policy, and I don't intend to swear, but is this
Oh, yeah, you can say whatever you want.
Okay. So this the starting point for me in my design career was designing escort ads, hookers, print ads in the back of the local weekly alternative news weekly paper.
Classy.
The design equivalent of basically being like a fry cook, like at a strip club or something. And that's where I got my start. And because I was raised by two blue collar, my mom and dad were very much blue collar. I just applied the same ethic. I go, you got to work your way up. And that's the only way you can do it. So if you got to shovel shit. And then that lasted way longer than that ever should have lasted. I did that for about 4 years before I realized, oh, you don't have to, there's other jobs out there for you. So I bounced around.
So instead of, you know, photoshopping out track marks and stretch marks and stuff on the escorts.
Like the typesetting, I never had to typeset the words busty and hung in a headline before, and it happened. And more.
Well, now it's an everyday thing.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a relic in a way. I'm not that old, but you know, the world has changed so much that print media just isn't what it used to be. In 2002, it was still a very profitable business. So the back of like these alt weeklies, and every big city has them, LA, Dallas, whatever. You know, when you see them, they're just, you know, like the weekly music, you know, music listings, club listings, blah, blah, blah. Well, this took up like probably a third of the paper. It was a big moneymaker because stuff like, you know, Craigslist didn't exist and online, you know, porn and escort services really didn't exist online yet. So this was the only way you get it done. And on top of that, the ads had to be paid for up front. It was called, I believe, the adult adult services was what it was formerly called. So you'd see just like straight up hookers coming in the office. There's a pay window and you had to pay credit card or cash, no checks. Or the ad didn't run. So
I'm
you were literally
assume they some, didn't have yeah, a lot of credit cards.
You were literally laying out ads for hookers, and sometimes they didn't even run the ads because they weren't paid for. And they obviously the paper is providing this the design services because I don't know of any escorts that have their own art department. So that's kind of like the nitty gritty of
those ones are out in Vegas.
Yeah, you're probably right. Paid dues is what I chalk it up to. It's a glamorous story of the humble beginnings of OK Pants.
So,
and, I mean, and a whole bunch of other stuff happened, but that's really the nickel
that's,
tour of my...
That's the highlight. That's the highlight reel is hooker ads.
I believe that's the right term, my salad days, which yeah. I was much lighter than two physically. So I was eating a lot of salads, literally. So,
yeah, I know that feeling. Again, before I had kids, I was much thinner.
Yeah, I have no excuse. I just love pizza.
Yeah, that's a good one, too. Don't get me wrong. Even without kids, I'm sure at this point I would be in this shape because I'm a few years older than you. So.
Yeah. Well, father time comes for all of us, right?
Yes. My metabolism shut down around 25.
And pizza's delicious. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, my metabolism shut down, but my mouth didn't tell me that it was time to slow down. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I physical fitness is important to me, especially because when you get around your mid-30s, you could still have fun. I still feel good, but you really got to start tuning, at least I do, tuning it up because it's really easy to end up sitting on my butt working for like 10 straight hours. And, you know, with phones having step counters, I look at my step counter some days and it's like, I don't think I hit 2,000 steps for a day. And that's just, I just started to say, you can't do this anymore. You got to move around.
Yeah, I need to get better about that. I do it occasionally, but not nearly enough.
Yeah, it's good, man. I'm by far and away not like a physical workout monster or CrossFit freak.
I was about to say you're not a CrossFit junkie.
No. I mean, I like to lift weights. I'm not made to run. My knees not built to run. My brother's a marathon runner. I'm not.
Oh, is he?
He looks like the physical opposite of me as far as body types go. Remember the NES ice hockey game?
Uh-huh.
Where you pick the players. So you had one slender, skinny guy, one medium guy, and then one wide, squatty dude.
Is that your family portrait?
That's pretty much it. Yeah. So, I mean, I like to move around and I like to work out. That's something I've really gotten to be fond of, but it's still very much a work in progress for me.
Hey, yeah, well, do it now because the older you get, it gets harder. I got 5 years on you, and I'm starting to get to that age where I feel worse in the morning when I wake up than I did when I went to bed.
Oh,
and it's not because I've been drinking. It's just because you're getting old.
You got to discover the super soldier serum or something.
Yeah. Well, if Steve Rogers wants to come off of some so I can turn into Cap.
That's the main motivator for me to acquire wealth is not because I want like a cool car or I want like, you know, a yacht, but I want to be able to afford the super serum because I'm not an athlete. So I couldn't get in trouble. This is going to be a hot take, too hot for the internet, but I couldn't really get, like, there's no doping violations in graphic design, and I'm not using this body for any actual function other than to, like, try to look good. So, you know, why wouldn't I, you know?
Yeah,
look true. Like, it'll look weird being 55 and having abs, but it's my life, and it's my journey, my choice.
Well, as long as you do it responsibly and you don't shrink the boys up too much.
the science end of thing. We got a lot of research to do on all the science of it. So, but when I'm rich, I can pay someone to do all that for me. So I don't have to worry about that.
Well, and your wife may not be too happy with that either.
My ex-wife. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Didn't know.
That's okay. I'm living free with no one to watch over me to tell me not to do steroids. So
there you go.
It's a whole thing going on over here.
That's
a whole podcast for another time, I think.
We'll do that on the follow up one.
There you go.
So getting back into work life after that awkward transition.
Sure. Let's write the course corrector.
Yeah. So after the hooker ads, what comes for you then?
Oh, you mean how do I actually want to still do design after subjecting myself to that for 5 years?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, so fresh out of college, I worked for a printing company doing production work.
I mean,
that's essentially what you were doing. It was a lot of production.
You cut your, and it was like you cut your, I'm sure your experience was not unlike mine in that you cut your teeth. You really learn efficiency. You just learn how it is to be a productive designer and a production designer on top of that, whatever.
Yeah, very much so.
On the weekends and stuff, I was still very much into being in punk bands and stuff and playing shows. So I was really tapped into like the local music community, even though we weren't like successful in like the sense that we ever toured or like got any deals. But I was really learning about business from being in bands, booking shows, and handling that stuff creatively for this band I was in whatnot. So, sure. You know, you build connections there. You're doing artwork for other bands. I was, you know, gaining the attention of other promoters because I would always be flyering for my bands. And flyering is a thing. I don't know if bands do that in 2016, but that was like something that definitely set me apart from other bands in town with the promoters, at least. So
Right. That
took a lot of, you know, that took like a lot of stick-to-itiveness to sort of finally have the conversation like, yeah, I know you think I'm just this dumb dude in a band that you give drink tickets to, but I also, you know, I do design. That's what I'm my main thing. Can I do like your flyer design? Can I do your poster designs?
Sure.
And so it was a lot of just those needling away at that with the local music community. And then I eventually got a job with Live Nation. They had like a local, a Cleveland area division, if you will. They still do. So I became essentially their graphic art department until the America went broke in 2008. So they had to lay me off. I mean, because, and it wasn't a bad thing. They didn't want to do it. It just was, everyone was getting laid off in 2008. So they said, we want to keep you on as a freelancer. And I go, perfect. I go, let's work out a deal. And then from there, I had worked enough day jobs that really where I was viewed more as an expense than an investment or an asset to the companies I was in. And that was sort of my springboard into the freelancing world. And that was where I developed OK Pants. And I just was at the point where I was like, OK, you need to grow up and just do this thing. And either you do it and it succeeds, or you just get fed up, or you get spat out and you just bartend on weekends, or you wrangle carts in a Walmart parking lot. But it's shit or get off the pot time for freelancing. So that was like 2008, which I was 28. 28, 29. And I just started working, just started freelancing, you know, took every crappy little job I could get and just
$200 here and there.
Yeah. I mean, people haggling you down, trying to haggle you down to like $100, $150, whatever.
Sure.
But it was like, again, my folks, especially my dad, just had that workaholic gene in him where he just was just mortified of going broke or getting fired all the time. So that was the thing that really pushed me along to get like, you know, whatever freelance gigs I could get. And it wasn't always glamorous. I mean, that's not shocking news to anybody that listens to your podcast, I'm sure. But that was, damn, 8 years ago. So it feels like I've made some strides, and but I'm still very much just learning the process of running your own studio and working for yourself.
Yeah. So, you know, within that, you know, I know you've mentioned both your parents had this blue collar work ethic, and you kind of came from a blue collar background. And you're very much, I mean, for all intents and purposes, even though you were kind of taking that blue collar mentality, we're in a white collar profession. Let's face it.
Yeah,
we sit on our butt in front of the computer, and you know, the most strenuous thing that's going to happen to us is we're going to get carpal tunnel syndrome one day.
Or the latest update of Adobe Illustrator sucks. I mean, those are the rigors of the position. Not until recently. I was the last person on earth to complain about it, but the most recent one is blech. At any rate, though, you know what? That's an interesting point, though, because I always took pride in, you just see people on Twitter complaining about this app is garbage, this app needs to do this, this app needs to do that. And what I really learned early on was, if you can adjust to the tools and work within what the tools are giving you, and shut your fucking mouth and just make them
thank
work.
Thank you for saying that.
I think there's a lot, like, I think people, especially you kids out there, there's something to be said for just, you know, if you don't like the tools you're using, make a better one. But I think working within the limitations of what you're given sometimes is a very, very underrated trait to have and to a skill to teach yourself.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think that's one of those where, you know, you always hear people say, think outside the box. I like having a box there because that pushes me in how to be creative within
sure,
that box.
Or build your own box.
Yeah, or build, exactly, exactly. You know, I mean,
build a hexagonal box, do whatever you want. But, you know, these trillion-dollar companies really don't give a shit if you're mad that, you know, the panel design in the new app isn't to your liking, because there's 3 billion other people out there that are paying for it that don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm not, and I mean, I don't want to side with, I'm not trying to side with these tech giant companies. I'm just merely making the point that I think,
it's a tool.
Builds character to learn how to use your tools and just work within that.
Yeah, you don't hear a carpenter complaining about he built a shitty house because he had a shitty hammer.
I mean, could you imagine a dude that had to keyline and do registration work and, like, you know, take out the litho tape that was like a graphic designer back in 1984?
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, his entire studio that was probably like 3,000 square foot fits inside of my iMac now. I think that's another thing that benefited me is when I was at art school, and I don't want to turn this into Tales from Art School, but going into it, all my teachers just were old school. Like, you just saw all the old school methods, and they didn't have a clue what Photoshop was. So you developed an appreciation for that, you know, the ways and how much it sucked to have to do stuff before, you know, Quark Express existed and InDesign existed and so on and so forth. So I think I came along at a very good time in life because I sort of was right in the middle of all of that. And that kind of grounded me and gave me work ethic with stuff.
Right. Well, I mean, I took the extended college plan and was asked to leave after my first year because I had too much fun outside of class and never made it to class.
Yeah.
So, you know,
That wouldn't happen anymore, I don't think. They'll just take you and they'll take your tuition dollars and let you coast through as long as you want.
Oh, no, they'll still kick people out. I've seen it happen to some of my nephew's friends.
Yeah, yeah. Where'd you go to school?
I graduated from University of South Alabama here in the sweltering hot city of Mobile.
I mean, that's what state school's for. I'm not projecting
what
you might have been like at age 19, but
I was a douchebag.
You have till like the age of 25 to be an asshole, you know. And I'm not talking about, you know, I'm just talking about being the type of person that thinks the universe revolves around you and you're indestructible. And then after that, it's like, okay, there's a little bigger picture at play here.
Somebody didn't tell one of our current presidential candidates that.
Oh, yeah, no. There's a presidential campaign? There's an election this year?
Yeah.
No idea.
Yeah, you wouldn't know it all being in Cleveland right now.
What, riot fences everywhere for a 50-mile square radius? I have no idea.
A buddy of mine sent me a link to the list of all the things that were banned. And it was hilarious reading over it. Because one of them was mace, and they specified both the weapon and the spray.
Mm-hmm.
Are there a lot of Renaissance fairs going on around there where
you're talking about like the Morningstar, like the Game of Thrones weapon.
Yes,
not
exactly.
The spray.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they specified both, but they.
Yeah, I don't think. Well, the NRA, I don't think the NRA covers Morningstars and swords and whatnot.
But yeah.
That's a different. The one thing you are allowed to carry around downtown,
guns.
AR-15s.
Yeah.
And I don't I don't intend to turn this into a gun discussion at all. I don't care where you fall on it or anybody listening. But
yeah, I'm the same way.
I sure as fuck don't feel safe seeing people walk around with rifles slung over their shoulders. That's just me.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
Yeah, it's I don't feel any freer or safe seeing it.
Yeah.
You know, this is not a soapbox thing, and I respect anyone's right to bear arms, but I don't want to live in a country that is progressively making me feel like I have to go buy a gun.
Yeah, that's the way I am. Like, yeah. I know me, and I have small kids. I don't want a gun in the house, not because I have anything against people having guns.
You start to feel like you have to have one.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, it's going to become, I reserve my right to not have to bear arms because I live in a civilized, perceived civilized country and stuff. So, I don't know. Again, listen, I have no problem with it at all. If you want to own guns, you want to own, that is your right. It's part of the Constitution. It's part of what we live in. I'm just speaking to my experience over the last year, especially the last week. So, anyways, let's move on to some. I mean, we could talk about the orange, you're fired guy or anything else, but I don't want to talk about guns anymore.
I don't either. That'll be a hot. That'll be an interesting one next week when this goes up. to see the comments we get.
May God be with your mentions and your comments, my friend.
Hey, you're going to be or direct
them.
First,
yeah, direct them. I'm not afraid. You can feel free to take it into my mentions at OK Pants on Twitter. You know, there's just better things, in my opinion, to talk about.
I agree. Let's talk about some more artsy things. That's a lot more fun and more interesting for me. I don't know about you.
I say this as I'm wearing a shirt that says, I am a weapon, but that's besides the point. Well, that's actually different. Entirely the point of this conversation.
That is entirely the point. So let's jump around and we'll get back to, you know, some of the work and stuff you've done. But let's talk about, you know, kind of your involvement and how you first – I mean, obviously you're from Cleveland. So, mm-hmm. You know
– I know it's going to be a shock for people that follow me on social media, but yeah, I'm from Cleveland.
Yes. So, you know, it's the home of Go Media and WMC Fest was started there. And I'm assuming that Cleveland, even though it's a fairly major metropolitan area – or at least big enough to host a few sports teams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the design community probably is still fairly close knit enough where you've gotten around and you know people. And
surely, yeah. I mean, Cleveland in the big picture is not a big city. It's not Chicago. It'll never be confused with New York or Dallas or Boston. But that's our strength, is that it is a pretty close-knit city in all aspects and all industries, especially in the creative industry. Mm-hmm. So what really precipitated Weapons of Mass Creation Fest is, I think, you know, Jeff Finley, the original founder, mm-hmm. was like, we need to get out from behind our computers and actually talk to face-to-face and build a community both locally and nationally. And he wasn't wrong.
Sure.
And 7 years later, here we are. So, but the local community especially, it's just been really energizing. And I think it's really brought clarity to younger people that don't have a clue how to, you know, take the first step in just doing anything creatively, art or design or anything, to that outlet.
Sure. Well, I mean, so this is going to be my first WMC Fest.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm looking forward to it because while I've done freelance, it's never been really my full-time gig unless I've kind of been forced into it being my full-time gig.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of looking forward to, you know, meeting people and seeing what everybody's take is in that community, because my experience has been with, you know, Creative South. Really being the first creative conference I went to. And then I've been to a few more since then, but
well, that's,
I'm looking
yeah.
forward to, yeah.
I think that's like, it's really pollinated with Creative South, Creative Works and other, you know, the conferences of these DIY of this, you know, born of like the DIY ethic and whatnot.
Sure.
So it's done a lot, and I'm not saying WMC Fest. Well, Mike would say that he definitely got the spark to start Creative South from his experiences at WMC Fest. So I don't think that's unfair to say.
No, he said it many times.
Yeah, but it's I think what we're doing differently this year that's exciting compared to other years is it's real workshop and community intensive. So we do have some really great speakers. Stefan Sagmeister, I think, is as exciting as it gets for any conference, period. Yeah. I had a chance to see him at Howe a few years ago, and it was pretty awesome. So to see him in a much smaller stage in terms of the crowd in a more intimate environment, I think is going to be fun. But, you know, beyond that, I think Heather and Brian, the organizers of WMC Fest, took a look at what other dimension they can add to this experience. So, you know, you don't have to feel compelled to sit in a seat for 9 straight hours just listening to talks. You could feel engaged in other ways. So the workshops definitely got like an upgrade, and they got some different dynamics added to them. The podcasting aspect of things, I think, brings, I don't want to say entertainment to make it sound vacant, but more.
That's fine. I will accept the vapid.
Like entertaining in a different way. To where you don't feel like you're sitting in a class.
Sure.
And beyond that, the vendor village and all these things and the studio tours. So it becomes so much more of a dynamic experience, especially for a really truncated cost, for the lack of a better word.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, this is your second year hosting, right?
Yep.
So how is it different? 'Cause being a host versus being an attendee, obviously there's a lot more being up on stage.
Yeah, well, which I mean, I won't hide from it. I'm very attention starved, but I also know that
I know that feeling as well.
I'm still building the story I have to tell from a speaking keynote speaker aspect. So where I fit is, you know, I sort of bring to the table what I think the conference needed, which is not necessarily comic relief, but a chance for everyone to sort of catch their breath, decompress from what's being talked about, and sort of just shift you into the next talk. I thought that's a fun thing for me. And it's a fun thing to give some people I've known for a while the platform to tell their story. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it was just me telling my story every year about hooker ads, I think everyone, there wouldn't be a WMC Fest. I mean, but that was sort of, I think, what I like doing and where I like fitting into the community beyond just being an active artist.
Yeah. Though if you keep telling the story about hooker ads, one day you could host the AVN Awards. So,
well, listen, Bill's got to get paid.
If they want you.
We already got on the gun thing. I don't want to get into adult films right now. That seems like a lot.
Joking.
We'll do a Creative South After Dark or something and we could talk
there
about
we go.
That. But yeah, it was really cool for me because I, you know, was fooling around with comedy, open mics and stuff, and like satisfying a need to sort of purge ideas I had nothing to do with design. Uh-huh. And it sort of felt like a great way to sort of shoehorn that into my design career. And I think I didn't hear anybody complaining last year about how it went. And I felt really good about it. And it was a whole lot of just riffing and a whole lot of just playing off of what people were bringing to the table. And again, it was just being, it was nice that I felt like I could be part of the spotlight without hogging the spotlight and sort of being selfless and, you know, serving the speakers and those other aspects of the conference.
Sure.
Which
I mean, you're there to
be very honest.
Move things along.
Yeah. Which, to be honest, I didn't know if I was capable of, because when I get talking, especially, you know, any, as we've seen with this podcast, it just sort of goes wherever it goes. So it felt good. And again, it's nice to express yourself and connect with an audience in real life. I love social media, like I'm sure everybody else does, but it can isolate you and it can really start to make you weirder if you let it.
Oh yeah, because you're talking out into a vacuum, and you know there's not that immediate response that you get back from.
Well, what it does, yeah, I mean, from my personal experience, what it does if I'm not careful about it is it becomes addictive because you throw things. You throw shit out in the ether and you immediately just stay posted up to see what comes back.
Mm-hmm.
Good or bad. Like, and then It's like, you know, when I was a kid, I watched hours and hours and hours of television a day, and I was glued to TV. Didn't matter what it was. I just consumed it, or I just let it consume me, if you want to get real philosophical, Twitter deep about it. But anyways, that's what I find myself with social media, is it's like a video game to me. I can't put down, like I can't put the controller down.
Sure.
So I don't think it's to the point where it eats away my productivity yet. But yeah,
if you let it would.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I would do it even if it yielded no sort of benefits in way of, you know, getting okay pants work. So I think that's both a terrible thing and a good thing at the same time. Moderation is everything.
Exactly. So, you know, you kind of mentioned, and I'm going to bounce back here to your career, since you mentioned the stand-up and things like that. And, you know, obviously you have a fairly decent sense of humor.
That's subjective. Depends on who you ask, but thank you.
You entertain me, so.
I'll take that. That's a win for me. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, I was just going to jump in on your thing, so please continue.
So, you know, with the try and stand up and things like that, is that how you got your foot into doing the posters for like Patton and Wyatt Cenac and
things like that? No, and Kyle Kinane. Yep. I mean, no, I didn't. I really, in dealing with my favorite comedians, and I'm not using hyperbole, those are my three favorite comedians. Mm-hmm. Kyle Kinane especially is my favorite comedian. I don't ever try to joke with them. I don't ever, you know, like, that's their job to me. Like, that's what they're here to do. And what I'm here to do is create art. So I just have been a fan of comedy for as long as I can remember. So I really started to, you know, drill into discovering new comedy around 2009, 2010, especially because, you know, Patton Oswalt came to town. So the story from that is with doing the Patton poster was, I had time to do extra work or do stuff that was satisfying for myself. So I just went out on a limb and printed up posters for the Patton Oswalt show that was in Cleveland at the time, because I was, you know, I had that relationship with the venue. And I was grabbing a drink before the show, and the girl that was the marketer for the show comes out to me, and she goes, I've been looking all over for you. Patton saw your poster, and he said he was laughing uncontrollably, and he said he wants to meet you after the show. And it's like that dream moment. I'm like, yeah, right. I go, get the fuck out of here. And she goes, no, seriously.
For Ashton Kutcher to pop out somewhere with a
video. Well, it just was like, you know, we watched the whole show. It was great. And then I just figured he would have other things going on, or it wasn't going to happen. You know, that sort of cautious optimism. And he had just had his daughter pretty recent to that. So he wasn't like in party mode after the show. He was very much there to work, do his show, go back to the hotel or whatever he was, you know, doing. And he met me and my then girlfriend, and he couldn't have been cooler. You know, you could tell he was very tired, but he was like super down to just, he goes, I love your work. And he goes, I'd love to, you know, hire you to do posters. So I go, I just so happen to have business cards on me. And at that time I wasn't carrying those around with me. So I gave him one and I go, I'll never hear from this dude. And he emailed me the next day and hired me, paid me out of his own pocket to do these posters and whatnot for, you know, a show a few months after that. And that was what was like, I'm like, man, I go, this is easily the coolest thing that's happened in my career, period. And still,
I would ride high from that.
You know, I've done a lot of cool things since then. And I still think that was like the thing when I'm like, oh, I go, not all famous people are shitty. Some people really are who you think they would be behind the scenes. And, you know, that was, I always had a lot of respect for comedians as artists on the level of whatever, you know. But that was the thing that really drew me in, where I go, this is the community I feel like as at home with as I would be with the design community, which is not. Yeah. So you know, I started using social media, and I don't like using it just to be like, I have something on sale, go buy this here. And then what started happening was any diarrhea I had in my brain as far as observations went, it just gets tweeted out, and I can't even help it. It's like the class clown thing. You just can't help it. And then it started to feel wimpy, where I'm like, yeah, anybody can fucking sit behind a computer and try to make jokes. There's nothing at stake there. You know, there's no consequences if something you say or on the internet isn't funny. But what scared the shit out of me was get on stage and try doing 5 minutes of jokes in front of a crowd, in front of a hostile crowd, you know, in front of people that don't want to give you laughs. And it scared me so badly that I was like, if you don't do this, you're going to be a wimp and you're going to die a pussy. And then I finally tried it, and it was like a drug. I mean, it was like being in bands again. It was that same thing where it terrified me at first, and then it was like, I want to do this every night of my life until I die.
Sure. So how did that first night go? Did you kill or did you bomb?
Well, what would have been best is if I bombed, to be honest with you. And I didn't. I'm not saying like Dave Chappelle, the Second Coming, was born that night. But I did 5 minutes. The room was very supportive in that there was a bunch of comedians. And, you know, the room was kind of tuned to sort of really be open to like new comedians trying stuff. So
sure,
I did 5 minutes and I got laughs. And then at one point, like people clapped a little bit. And then, but what really meant most to me about that first experience was I got my buddy Ramon to laugh. Uh-huh. And Ramon Rivas, he's not going to give you laughs just to give you laughs. You know, he's very like, he's just there to book the room. And then sure. I go, okay. And then afterwards, you know, I go, he goes, I'm sorry. And I go, for what? And he goes, I'm sorry for what your life is about to become. Because he's a working comedian. He's going to have, he's literally tonight taping at midnight on Comedy Central. He has a half hour special coming out this fall. Like, he's the real deal. He's a working comedian. So to be respected on that level by guys like him who are my friends, but also the type of friends that aren't going to just gas you to gas you.
Yeah.
That meant a lot to me. And then I, you know, the actual okay pants work just got in the way of me becoming working the open mic circuit and honing my craft. But I've probably done like a dozen open mics after that. And I don't feel like I ever bombed. And you just sort of learn to walk your way through those moments of silence. You don't get laughs, which I think is just probably the best trait you could develop, even not as an entertainer or anything, just as like a human being, you know, to have to express yourself and to be replied with complete silence from a room of human beings and learn to sort of just walk through that. I think it's an important thing that can, you know, it's an important skill, I think, to have, at least for me.
Absolutely. When I was in high school, I'm a huge comedy fan. Mm-hmm. And when I was in high school, I desperately wanted to be a stand-up. And, you know, I was taking a speech class, you know, that mandatory speech class that you have to take in high school. Mm-hmm. And one of the ones was you had to interview somebody. So I got an in and with the local comedy club. And I can't even remember who the comic was, but I mean, you know, he's like, you know, at that point, I wasn't technically old enough to get in, but he's like,
yeah,
you know, come by, I'll have tickets for you, I'll get you in. And I went and did it, and he called me up on stage. Like, I had not prepared anything. I was not expecting it. And I just did like a minute and a half.
Yeah.
And it was.
So he put you on the spot. Like,
he put me on the spot. And it was. It was bad. It was really bad.
But you did it, right? Like, you went through with it.
And the worst part was I still really wanted to do it.
That's the best part. That's the best part.
Yes, that's the best and worst part. But I haven't really lived in anywhere where there's been that opportunity. And, you know, I'm a, you know, responsible enough parent at this point where,
yeah,
like,
Well, you're a parent. You've accrued certainly enough experience to probably fill, you know, 5 or 10 minutes of comedy to at least try it.
I pick up 5 to 10 minutes in a weekend.
Yeah, but that's the, you know, to go back to my friend Ramon, you know, there was no comedy scene in Cleveland. There's right. a huge DIY independent comedy scene in Cleveland, largely, pretty much primarily just because of him and the efforts of, you know, some other comedians, but he really championed it and he really just took the reins of it. Like, okay, there's no shows. You know, 5 years ago, there was maybe one show a week that wasn't booked by like the big, you know, comedy clubs in town, which are there too. And he's like, there's no comedy going on Wednesday night. We're going to do a comedy show at this taqueria or this coffee shop.
So he was essentially building out those alt and open mic rooms.
He built all of it. I mean, and I'm not, there's a, you know, a community that helped him.
Well, yeah.
But he basically every night of the week, there is a comedy show.
That's awesome.
And I think what's more amazing is he built a community and then he got it up and running. He's been in LA for a month because he did the special and stuff. And he's sort of just out there working now. He has a show booked every night this week, especially with the RNC. And, you know, after we do this podcast, I'm going to go to a bowling alley in the middle of a not great neighborhood because he got a show booked there with probably a ton of like national talent. This is going to show up because right. he wanted it to happen and he just believed enough in making it happen. And that to me is like as inspirational as it gets. Right.
Sure.
So, and that's the spirit of like WMC Fest. Like he's a couple of years, he's programmed comedy with WMC Fest when he could.
Okay.
So like those are the things that really keep me charged and keep me going. You know, I look a lot of the time outside of Dribbble and outside of the design community to see how things work and how people get things up and running. Like that's the stuff that keeps me interested and keeps my work interesting. If people gotcha. Think it's interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, with this love for comedy and getting hooked on the drug of performing, how are you working that with, you know, your day job of, you know, okay pants?
It's the dream of being an open mic maverick has just been put on hold right now. I don't have time for it.
Gotcha.
The client load is just
actually, and I'm paying bills is more important.
I'm not complaining one bit about it. I don't want anyone to think that like I'm disenchanted with the world of design and art, because I'm not. Actually, the comedy kind of fuels that stuff, but it's just too busy. It's for me to even do like 5 minutes. Like open mic's very much about consistency and rhythm, like working out or something. So it's like you can't just show up for an open mic and then not do it for like 2 or 3 weeks. Like if right. you really are into it, you gotta, it's like working out for your dumb mouth and your dumb face. Like it's just,
well, yeah, I mean it's the same way though with like, you know, art and stuff though. If you spend too much time away from it, you get rusty and you gotta build those chops back.
I don't believe in hobbies, as weird as that sounds. Like I don't like being perceived as a hobbyist about anything I'm passionate about. So it's like when I got into art. No, I mean definitely not golf. Like to me, when I started doing comedy, it's like I go, I want to do this all the time. And I'm like, but there's only one of me. Like when I see people that like want to do art and design and they're like, I don't know how to do this, or like they clearly are at a job they hate, I go, why wouldn't you just want to do this all the fucking time? Like that's just where I'm at with things. So, you know, I don't have hobbies. I mean, I don't like looking at comedy as a hobby. I like just looking at comedy as a thing I do when I can do it.
Sure.
Same as anything else. And other than that, I really don't have any hobbies. I jump on the treadmill as much as I can, but that's awful. I don't play video games. I don't have a gardening fetish of any kind.
Hey, I have a very nice garden. Don't make
I just me. I just work. And then when I'm done working, I feel like satisfied and I just want to zone out. So
put on some Netflix and just turn your brain off for a little bit.
Yeah. It's, that's the other end of things. It's, keeping that all going, keeping everything balanced and sort of knowing when to shut off and disengage for a minute.
So, you know, you have an office, right? Like you leave your house to go freelance. You
don't I had an freelance. Office for 3 years and then I moved into a big, basically like a warehouse loft space. So I work. Oh, okay. My studio is where I live now.
Okay.
And I think being in a studio for 3 years that was separate from my home gave me discipline to do that. When I first started out, I was working out of my house and that was awful.
Productivity. Yeah, I mean, I've done that and that's tough because you've got so many distractions, whether it be, oh, look, what's happening on Days of Our Lives or, need to go to the grocery store.
Yeah, it's just everything. Well, no, what I would do was, you know, you have best laid intentions of I'm going to be up at 8 a.m. I'll be working by 9 a.m. and then I'll be done working at 6 or 7 p.m. and I won't take any emails, no calls, no nothing after that. And then what happens is you wake up at 9 a.m. and you say, okay, well, I'll get going by 10 a.m. and I'll do this. I'll just stay up later and I'll, and that just didn't happen. And all the evils of working from home really started to eat away at my productivity. So, when Jack Prince approached me with like they had some extra space to rent out, I go, perfect. And that was really good. It was good to mentally have a break from where I lived. And then I sort of just adopted proper practices for myself and for what I needed okay pants to be. So, you know, nowadays with where my workload is and the projects I take on, it all works out much better that way. But yeah, you also get cabin fever when you work from home because I'm like, I got to go to Target for the fourth time this week, right? Like I need contact lens solution. Maybe, I don't know, but it's not good. You stay cooped up too long. You got to make
time to see an actual human being.
Yeah. Not even, I mean, yeah, that, but more or less just the disengagement factor of just not scrolling through Twitter for the 4,000th time or, staring at an art board that hasn't been like, nicked away at for like 10 or 15 minutes.
Gotcha. So yeah. How are you finding that work-life balance with, since you're talking about being so, you know, so booked at the moment, you work from home.
Yeah. It's well, that,
is it that going to Target for the fourth time this week or is it
that's where the gym really came into play because I'm like dude, I'm like, you spent like $200 at Target this week and you live by yourself. No one needs to spend that much money at Target, and you didn't. I was just buying stuff, not even like furniture or larger items. It was just like you have gone through three cases of LaCroix in 2 weeks, like you and you haven't had any guests over, so who's drinking all LaCroix, Aaron? I really developed, the goal I set for myself this year to improve on was scheduling out projects better. So I didn't have like three or four things overlapping at once. And I feel like this summer, especially, I really did a good job of being disciplined and sort of just being very upfront with clients. Like I cannot get to this until this time. And I will give you this time to this time. Anything before or after that, we have to negotiate. But and then before, lo and behold, when I sort of mastered the art of that honed the art of that, I was like, oh, yeah, idiot. Like now you don't have to worry about working in October because you finally figure it out. You don't have to do everything at once. So it's way less stressful. You know, you give yourself a day off here and there to just literally do nothing. That's been super important for me. Mm-hmm. That's been the big progression from the business end of things.
Sure. So do you find, you know, by setting boundaries with those clients, you end up with a better relationship with them too?
Yeah. Well, I always,
or at least a little more respect from them.
The respect thing hasn't really been a problem for a long time. Like I always get respect. Like if I feel disrespect up front,
I don't mean like,
or they respectful of my schedule, or like, yes, they're like, I need this tomorrow. And then you just be like, I can't do it. Do you want this done the right way? I can't do it that quickly. I'm sorry, repeat the question.
No, so I was asking, you know, about respect, and I didn't mean it in the fact of, you know, you've got a shitty client.
No, it's fuck you.
Yeah. But in the, you know, clients, you know, they have their own agenda, and rightly so. They're entitled to that. They don't always understand the process of things, and they, you know, a lot of times see it as, well, it's on the computer, so they're just pushing a button. They don't understand that things take time.
I think at this point, I just get a lot of people that are open to have the conversation, and I make things very clear up front about how, you know, logo and branding projects are, it's about a dialogue and it's about a process. And if you're open to me just sort of trying to educate you on how this should go, I think it's going to work out pretty well for you. Now, there are projects where people are like, yeah, I get that, but I just need you to do this way. And then you're like, all right, you're the one that has, you live with this thing. After I leave, you're living with it. So here you go. But
well, and those are the clients you don't do repeat business with, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's...
Or at least try not to.
The sale up front is always more than just... And this isn't even a sales pitch. This is just the reality of it is you know, you're not just paying for like a logo, or you're not just paying for this branding system.
Sure.
You're going to learn about why this works. So moving forward, hopefully with me after this project's over, you'll understand the moving parts of this thing. It's like, you know, people that buy their first house, they probably don't know how to, you know, put a light fixture in the ceiling or something. But, you know, after you actually go through it for the first time, you begin to understand, oh, okay. So
I begin to understand this is why I need to make more money so I can play an electrician.
I mean, but I've gotten way better at just being very upfront about what I need from a client in a project to make it work, and not operating out of a sense of fear that you're not going to pay me if I don't do this the way you want it done, or you're going to leave if I don't get this done for you in 2 days. So, once you get over that, it's a very freeing thing. And also I've had like some work experiences where I collaborated with some writers and some comedians on some corporate projects, which I learned a lot about, like how creatives work with companies. And that to me was huge. Cause I'm like, oh, okay. And I was like, you just sort of, it all starts to click together, and you just start to feel like a calmness and a confidence about how things go.
Gotcha. So with that calmness and confidence, you know, I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this.
Mm-hmm.
So like talking to you now, there's very much a calmness and confidence. And then you see your online Twitter handle, where it's your random brain drippings. Mm-hmm. A lot of times you come off, and I don't, this is going to sound horrible
insane.
The way I say it. I'm going to say there is like an intentional arrogance where it's like, having talked to you and having met you, I know that the real you isn't that way. Does that make sense?
So,
I mean, we all have that in a bit.
This just sounds like how Donald Trump is described to people. He's like, if you just
I know, and I'm trying not to describe it that way.
I get it. And I don't I forget that irony is lost a lot on the internet. And I forget, like, a lot of times it's not open mic 24 hours a day on the internet. But
I'm glad I'm not the only one.
No, but I just think, like, if you follow the story of my social media, as fucking narcissistic as that sounds, like, you start to figure it out and quote-unquote get it. I also think it to an extent that that's just honestly like, I think false humility is almost as gross as just being up your own ass all the time. Like, I just think be who you are. So that was the other thing about, to go back to like doing comedy live. I'm like, I don't want to like verbally retweet compliments to me, but like people go, oh, your Snapchat's really funny. And then I don't know, me not knowing how to take a compliment, I want to go, yeah, but I'm like the same guy. Like, I'm funny in real life too. You know that, right? And then I'm like, what? I go, just shut up and say thank you. Like, it's so, just be who you are. The point I'm trying to make is I'm the guy I am on the internet, and vice versa. I don't want to quote unquote get into this curating your own personality bullshit, because I think that's gross and I think it's awful and stupid. So, you know, I'm big on taking selfies these days, and not hiding how large I am these days, because I just think that the movement for myself just needs to be, this is the guy I am and this is what I do, and hopefully
take it or leave it.
Yeah, not even in a confrontational crappy way.
No, just, yeah.
I always like people that inspire me as far as like career building their own career goes are like guys like Henry Rollins, Howard Stern, Derek Hess, and Patton Oswalt. Like those are kind of my Mount Rushmore. And those guys all built, you know, empires of themselves based on authenticity. And just like when you saw whatever they were doing in different disciplines, you're like, oh yeah, okay. Yeah, that's them. Like I might hate that, but that's them and I respect that. So those things stuck with me a lot, like through the years. And I just always go back to like, that's just massively appealing to me to, and then it's also like, or, you know, even this is going to sound douchey, but The Rock. Okay. He is, you know, he built a friggin' empire off being The Rock. You know, yeah. It was like this wrestling entity, but that really was just an amplified version of himself. And now he literally gets 42 minutes of sleep a night, wakes up, yells into his Instagram every day. But you don't doubt for a second that's him, you know, like there's no, the makeup doesn't come off when he puts his phone down. He just is who he is. And he's figured out a way to win over the world with it.
Sure.
Or a massive audience. I don't know the world, but.
You know, so far he seems to be doing a pretty good job of the world from what I've seen.
Yeah, but he...
Now, granted, I'm not in Japan, so...
But he tried losing a bunch of weight, like, in the early 2000s because he knew he wanted to be in movies. Mm-hmm. So he slimmed down and, he had a goofy haircut and it just wasn't him. And it wasn't... People weren't buying it. You know, he was in movies and stuff. But when he realized, oh, I like to just eat 32,000 calories a day, lift weights like a maniac at 4 a.m, and just be the most me I can be all day long. That's what won people back over about him. So I'm not suggesting by any means, like, I want to be in Fast and the Furious 9. I'm just making the point that if you stick to who you are and what you are, you end up in a good place.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to phrase it.
And it's I know hosting an arts and design conference, it's weird that I mine my inspiration from The Rock, but and not from, you know, other artists or whatever, but that's where we are.
I will say I'm one of those weird designers where I don't put other designers on a pedestal. I mean,
like as far as contemporaries go?
Yeah, or even, you know, like So, you know, I look at like Saul Bass and I think their work is amazing, but at the same point, I know they were just a person.
Well, yeah, and especially in a pre-social media internet age, you know, those guys were just, you know, they're just dudes that did a job. Chip Kidd had a great line where he goes, the notion of being a famous graphic designer makes about as much sense as being a famous electrician. Like, and
yeah.
And there is so much truth to that. And I wish my ego would allow me to align with that. But at the end of the day, I'm just something different from that. But I respect the shit out of his work. And I love that statement. I just know at the end of the day, I'm just something different than that.
You're just you.
I'm not just me. I'm all me, Jason. Okay. No, but yeah, that's all you can be. I mean, it's people smell it on you from a mile away if you try making something that's not yours, or you try being something that you're not.
Right. Well, yeah, because I mean, you get people who like, I'm trying to figure out without calling anybody out. You see people out there who, when they're talking on the microphone or on stage or things like that, they're one way. Mm-hmm. And then the minute they get off stage, they're like this quiet, meek person that it's like, well, which one is the real you?
Well,
I realize there's a difference between an amplified version of yourself.
Yeah, there's a switch that some people turn on.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that so much because that's something you see like in a lot of athletes too, and especially fighters,
True, but there's a difference between an authentic version of that and an inauthentic.
Yeah,
version.
Yeah.
That's where I was
see your point.
With.
Yeah. I mean, I think more to your point, the people that routinely post the Facebook think pieces that are, you know, 4,000 words long and they are not short on an opinion about anything. And then when you show up and they're, you see them in person and they're the person in the corner of the room, arms folded, couldn't look more withdrawn. I get some people are a little more introverted and they need the internet to communicate better. And I suppose there's nothing wrong with that. I'm going back to WMC Fest, I think that's why this stuff is so important, because it'll help you to develop just being more you and more understanding there's more to life than a Twitter feed and comment sections.
Awesome.
And so that's more for, I'm sorry to cut you off. I mean, that's more for younger designers and younger people, I think, than our senior division, master's division people. But
those of us who are seasoned.
Yeah, seasoned. This is a great way to put it, Jason. Sorry to cut you off there.
Oh, no, that was it. So, you know, since we're kind of getting close to our time here. Mm-hmm. And what can we expect from you at WMC Fest this year?
Fireworks, baby.
Sweet. Just don't do like I saw on the news where the guy shoved the Roman candle down his pants.
No, that was...
That doesn't end well for anyone.
That was WMC5.
Oh, okay.
We're going to do something different this year.
Okay.
No, what you can expect from me this year, it's not even so much me. It's just sort of everything else about WMC Fest, I think, is going to be very refreshingly different from what, you know, past years have brought you. The things that have worked, they're still there, but I think the new stuff and the more engaging aspects of the event, as far as participation in community goes, that's what I'm excited about. Awesome. People know, I mean, I'm not known, but I think people know what to expect from me. I don't know, maybe mm-hmm. there'll be a dance number like the Oscars at the beginning. Who knows? You'll have to show up and find out. But
well, I'm looking forward to seeing that. Are you going to go through like three costume changes during that?
Oh, there'll be some wardrobe changes. Yeah, I think I look forward to doing more of the same that I did last year, in the sense that I come from a DIY background. I come from the punk and hardcore community, mm-hmm. and I like sort of being the backbone of the festival with that ethic, and then also not being afraid to entertain along with all the education that's going on. So I think it's a nice balance, and I think it's a great opportunity to just have fun.
Gotcha. So this year, if we set the Cuyahoga on fire, it will be for a good reason?
If the Cuyahoga is still here after the RNC leaves town, as well as the rest of the city, you and me can go down there with some Roman candles ourselves. And I'm not advocating arson, by the way.
Roman candles aren't arson.
If you do them right, I think they're. But it's Cleveland has changed so much over the last like 3 or 4 years, even compared to last year. There's so much different new things going on. I think it's, look, I don't get a penny from the Tourist Bureau to talk about this, but
yet,
the good point. I just think it's, there's a lot going on in Cleveland right now.
Awesome.
It's popping.
Cool. So wrapping up, where can we find you online?
You can find me online at okpants.com, and you can find me on Instagram, Snapchat, and Twitter at okpants, O-K-P-A-N-T-S.
Awesome.
And Aaron, you can add me on Facebook if you want. We could do that, but I think it's more fun where I just mentioned. I won't say no.
You can stalk Aaron on all social media platforms at...
Step into my den of madness, please. I implore you. It's not boring. I can say that confidently. It's not boring.
I can second that, having been friends with you on social media for a few years now.
Thanks, Jason. I appreciate that.
Hey, thanks for taking the time to talk to me. I'm looking forward to seeing you in a couple weeks.
Likewise, sir. And thanks again for having me.
You can find out more about Aaron on Twitter at OKPants or over at OKPants.com, and be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with him. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter at CreativeSOPod and follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CreativeSouthGA or over at CreativeSouthGA.com. And I'm at Jay Frostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. We're looking for sponsors. If you want to sponsor the Creative South podcast to help keep the lights on and to make the podcast even better, then email me at jason@creativesouthga.com or hit me up on Twitter at creativesopod. If you want to engage with the podcast more, check out a new podcasting app called Remarks that allows you to add notes and comments about the episodes, get feedback from other listeners, and hear from me as well. You can find it over at remarks.fm. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.